This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of November 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 10th of November 2016, which this week has been edited by Sue Frain, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: new campaign over base closure, city could be an engine room of productivity. £2 million deal to buy garrison ground. And housing plans for the elderly. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
New campaign over base closure, the city could be an engine room of productivity. Sir John Moore Barracks is set to close in 2020 or 2021, the government has announced. The Army Training Regiment base at Flowerdown near Littleton only opened in 1986, but is now surplus to requirements for the Ministry of Defence. Already a campaign backed by the local MP Steve Bryan, City Council, University and business leaders is pressing for the site to be converted into a knowledge park for businesses. Michael Fallon, the Secretary of State for Defence, made the announcement in the House of Commons on Monday. The news will not come as a shock, as the Chronicle revealed it was under serious threat in June, but the announcement has been greeted with sadness and dismay. Major John Cassidy, who served for 34 years in the Rifle Brigade and Royal Green Jackets, which moved to the barracks on the closure of Peninsula Barracks, and worked at the base between 1986 to 1989. And he said, "They have taken away a training depot which has been well served by the people of Winchester for years. That base represented something that has been there years, since Victorian times. I find it upsetting. Winchester has been part and parcel of the Rifle Brigade and the King's Royal Rifle Corps. They got to Winchester in 1856. Every year, the Royal Green Jackets hold their reunion at the barracks, several hundred people, and this will be a tremendous blow to them. Where will they go? You can't imagine their confusion and hurt. Every year, they swarmed into the town, filling up the coffers, especially the pubs." Patrick Cunningham, chairman of Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council, said, "It's going to be a really sad end, given how long the military have been there, and prior to that at HMS Flowerdown. But nothing can be done about it in terms of fighting the closure. It is a fait accompli. We are surprised by the news." He said the Parish Council support the idea of a knowledge park rather than housing. Mr. Cunningham added, "We want to see a continuation of employment and the protection of the Littleton Gap. Winchester is crying out for a business park." Mr. Bryan has joined business leaders, City Council and University to launch ambitious plans for a knowledge park on the 86-hectare site. The group revealed they are exploring how to bring hundreds of new high-skilled jobs to the site, which is expected to attract employers because of its proximity to the city and links to the A34. Housing developers will also be interested in the land across the road from Barton Farm. Mr. Bryan said, "It is disappointing the MOD has made what is an operational decision to dispose of the ATR because it marks the end of an era. But we have a huge opportunity to make a positive response, and I'm determined we will do that. I hear time and again from business leaders that we have a serious lack of commercial space in the city. So this land, becoming available, could tie up well with our long-stated ambition to foster high-quality, well-paid employment locally. Stuart Dunn from the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce said, "The proposed sale offers Winchester the opportunity to develop a knowledge park in partnership potentially with the university and business. Such a development would place Winchester at the cutting edge of innovation and bring jobs and economic growth to the city." Professor Joy Carter, Vice Chancellor at the University of Winchester, said, "There is a huge amount of potential for Winchester to be the engine room of productivity and creativity for the region." Councillor Stephen Godfrey, City Council leader, added, "Although hugely disappointed that one of Winchester's military connections is to be lost, I have been reassured by the positive indication given by the MOD for our proposals to see the barracks retained for employment. Rather than develop the site primarily for housing, which the council would resist strongly, as it would be contrary to its local plan, we hope to work with the MOD, the university, local business organisations, and some of the large companies that want to be in Winchester to create well-paid jobs for local people. The current intention is that Army Training Regiment will move to ATC Pirbright, Surrey, and the Band of the Rifles will move to Worthy Down, which is being redeveloped as a new military centre. Around 200 jobs are at the barracks, where around 2,000 soldiers are trained a year. It is unclear how many are civilians whose jobs may be at stake, although the closure is at least 4 years away.
£2 million deal to buy Garrison Ground. A deal has been struck between Tesco and the City Council over the Garrison Ground in Winchester. As revealed by the Chronicle last month, the council has been thrashing out a £2 million deal for the playing field at Bar End. The agreement paves the way for new plans for the leisure centre to relocate from the city centre to a new building on the edge of the city. The deal ends Tesco's interest in trying to develop the land next to Bar End Road for housing, but preserves its current sporting-related use. The council had been working on plans to place a sports centre closer to King George V playing fields, but many Highcliffe residents and community groups felt that the garrison ground would be preferable. This had been impossible whilst it remained outside the council's ownership. Council leader Stephen Godfrey said, "We want to provide a replacement sports and leisure centre for Winchester that offers opportunities to improve health and well-being for local people for years to come. We are working closely with the University of Winchester, the Pinder Trust and Hampshire County Council to deliver this vision. We have negotiated fair commercial terms with Tesco, with whom we have had a good relationship over the garrison ground for some time. I am delighted that we can now resolve the uncertainty which has surrounded the area for many years." Alec Brown, spokesman for Tesco, said, "We have been working closely with the council, who have leased the playing fields from Tesco for a number of years. We are pleased to have reached an agreement and hope the sale means that the site continues to contribute to the Winchester community for many years to come." Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor of the University, said, "This project is a huge opportunity for the Winchester City and region to have access to new and improved sports and leisure facilities." The news delighted Emma Back of Winchester Sports Art and Leisure Trust, who said, "We're excited by the prospect of a new sports and leisure centre being built there, and by the opportunity this presents to enhance the entire Bar End recreational area."
Housing plans for the elderly. Plans are being developed to build scores of new housing for the elderly in Winchester city centre. Fears had been raised about the housing for the elderly in the wake of the announced closure of Devonish House in Winchester. The Chronicle reported last month that St John's Winchester charity was planning to close Devonish House and relocate to alternative accommodation the remaining 12 residents. At the council meeting last Wednesday in the Guildhall, Councillor Martin Todd questioned the council leader, Stephen Godfrey, following the news revealed in the Chronicle on October the 6th. Its operator, St John's Winchester Charity, says Devonish House is no longer fit for purpose and would be too expensive, if indeed it was possible, to be modified. Councillor Todd said homes in those older and suitable buildings complied with, coupled with rising staff costs such as the living wage, would lead to more closures and a lack of suitable housing for the elderly. But Councillor Ian Tate, a trustee of St John's, said the charity had had high-level discussions with the council chief executive about plans for 60 new beds to replace Devonish House. St John's director, Clive Cook, told the Chronicle, St John's has active plans to build up to 30 new almshouses on two sites in the city centre that are designed to support older people in independent living. These new sites would be linked to our existing community. Our plans are dependent on community consultations and planning permissions, but we are determined to press ahead. The two sites are in Colebrook Street, near its current almshouses, and Cheswell Street, on the land next to the Cheswell Theatre. No further details were available from St John's. Councillor Caroline Horrell, portfolio holder for housing, said the council was building 52 new extra care places at Cheswell Lodge on Cheswell Street, on the site of the former open-air car park. There was also provision for schemes at Barton Farm, Whiteley, and the west of Waterlooville development. We have lower waiting times for elderly residents, she told the meeting. Meanwhile, St John's has been consulting over the closure, which jeopardises 32 full and part-time jobs. Some staff have been offered posts at Moorside, its home for people with Alzheimer's, which is set to be enlarged.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Berry, Ruth Berry, at home on the 28th of October. Browning, John Cawthorne Browning, on the 23rd of October, aged 76. Burt, Sydney James Burt, on the 25th of October. Cutler, Frederick Paul, known as Fred Cutler, at Winchester Hospital on the 1st of November. Hat, Anne Hat, on the 1st of November. Jordan, Cecil Jordan, at home on the 26th of October. Thompson, Trevor Thompson, at home on the 1st of November. Thompson, William Charles, on the 27th of October, at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 68. Now we have Christian comment.
And this week, it is written by the Reverend Graham Bowkett, the Area Dean of Alresford, and he entitles it, Learning from Our Father. The other day, whilst I was walking back to my car after watching Southampton Football Club play Sunderland at St Mary's, alongside me was a father walking briskly with his young son. Southampton had been victorious in a rather bland game, beating Sunderland, 1-0. The previous year, when the two teams had met, Southampton had beaten Sunderland 8-0. The father described this victory to his son, concluding that the game was comical. The young boy eagerly asked his father, "Why have the Saints only scored one goal? Surely Southampton should have done better than that." His father entered into a discourse about the merits, tactics, formations of the current team, and the boy periodically repeating his father's words. The lad, trying to keep up, skipped along by his father's side. The father informed his son that Southampton has met Sunderland on 67 occasions since 1931. Southampton had won 26 games, drawn 17, and lost on 24 meetings. The boy exclaimed, "That's comical. We beat them 8-0. That's comical. We should always win." Again, his father eagerly and with great passion imparted his knowledge to the boy, knowledge gathered over many years of watching his football team, a team he clearly loved. This too, I assume, was to be his son's inheritance. I was struck by the passion with which the father spoke to his son. I was struck by the eagerness of the boy to repeat, assimilate and affirm the deep allegiance that so obviously held by his father. It was clearly a very important moment in the life of both the father and the son. I remember thinking, 2,000 years ago, we are told, that wherever Jesus went, ordinary people, the people in the stands would come close, and they did so. They wanted to hear him speak, to see him act, join him in prayer. The eagerness of the ordinary people that came close to him testified wherever you look in the Gospels. I imagined all Christians to be the little boy, learning their faith from the Father. I dare to dream of a day when all humanity feels the passion and the brilliance of what has been given by God through his Son Jesus to us all. I realize we are far from that paradise. I believe there is a spiritual hunger that all humans feel, which can sometimes be filled by the distraction of the world. Football teams, cars, houses, careers, power, wealth, all of which are transitory, illusionary, comical. The Christian has one task: make God known in the world. And if need be, use words to misquote St. Francis. Actually, that's only pretty unfair. There is no dichotomy between words and actions. The two are really important. The task is to make sure our actions live up to our words. We have a duty to proclaim and to draw people near. And as we approach Christmas, that peculiar commercial proposition awkwardly associated with the birth of God amongst us, let us proclaim, let us act, let us pray for all humanity to know God, to love God through Jesus Christ.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So, got quite a lot of letters. There are some, they are grouped in together in various topics. So we'll start off with the first letter,
which is from Judith Martin, and it's entitled Heritage Site Fear. Sir, Alan Lovell of the Hampshire Cultural Trust proposes that Winchester should become a UNESCO World Heritage Site. He plans to spend £1.1 million to achieve this. Chronicle, November the 3rd. He suggests that one difficulty might be that, quote, the powers that be may think we already have too many walled Western cities, unquote. He's right that the UN focus has moved away from the developed world, but mistaken in thinking that Winchester is a walled city. Compare with York, which has both walls and a cathedral and also significant industrial heritage, but failed to be included in the tentative list, the necessary first step, in 2011. Europe, including Britain and Switzerland, overall has 317 of the total of 1,052 sites. So UNESCO's efforts are now concentrated on Africa and areas that are underrepresented. Even if Winchester were to be inscribed by UNESCO, the modest pot of UN funds would not be available. It's only accessible to developing countries. It might bring more tourists, although it's debatable how many more Winchester can cope with, at least until there is a wider range of hotel and hostel accommodation. A government paper looking at costs and benefits of World Heritage status in 2007 found the effect on tourist numbers was only marginal. Quote, around 0.3%, and this will be stronger for less famous sites. Unquote. There was an attempt to get Winchester on the list, probably about 15 years ago, but it didn't get very far. The response was that the city had been too spoilt. It hasn't got a great deal better in the intervening years, and the setting is more than ever compromised. A brilliant proposal was made in 2008 for a site to run from Portsmouth's historic dockyard across the seabed to France, taking in harbours, forts, wrecks, and everything else between. It didn't get on the list either. Winchester's current heritage needs careful nurturing, and £1.1 million would go a long way. Devoting this sum and a lot of energy to a bid for a title that has already been ruled out at a time when budgets are under such attrition is not good stewardship. That's from Judith Martin, Rumsey Road, Winchester.
Chris Higgins writes, City Visions. Sir, I was delighted to read your front page article about Hampshire Cultural Trust's enlightened vision for the city, with their aspirations to make Winchester into a World Heritage Site. I was equally pleased to see on your inside pages the exciting plans for a major new development for the university at West Downs, maintaining their record of commissioning high-quality contemporary architecture. Both these projects will be so good for the future image of Winchester, for its prosperity and its culture. Let us hope that the City Council will show a similar positive vision as they plan how to progress Silver Hill and Station Approach. But they will only be successful if they recognise that Winchester is a special place which deserves more than just commercial development with the most profitable bottom line. It is, after all, the ancient capital, a cathedral city with roots going back to William the Conqueror, King Alfred and the Romans before them. Is it too much to hope that there might be a Damascene moment for our public servants in the Guildhall? That's written by Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
Simon H.B. Cook entitles his letter, Silver Hill Panic? Query. Sir, I was very pleased to read in your October 27 edition that Professor Martin Biddle had comprehensively demolished the proposals put forward for a full archaeological dig in the centre of the city of Winchester. The sudden interest in archaeology from the objectors to the Silver Hill proposals originally emerged at the moment when it looked as if the development might actually proceed. At the time, the archaeology proposals seemed to be a panic and somewhat cynical move, a manoeuvre by the main objectors to Silver Hill to derail the development. As it happened, the ploy was not necessary because the Henderson proposals collapsed for other reasons. However, anyone who lived in Winchester in the 1980s would recall that a comprehensive excavation had already taken place on what is now the Brooks site. At the time, I was the Director of Amenity Services at Winchester City Council, when the archaeological section, under the supervision of my museums division, managed the dig, helped by numerous volunteers. The whole point of the work was to find out if there was anything of particular significance that might merit further work. The live dig was open to public view and resulted in a publication of a pamphlet which highlighted the findings, but there was nothing found to indicate anything that was of particular archaeological significance. Simon H.B. Cook, Shepherdstown, Alsford.
Paul Twelfthtree writes about councillors' slur. Sir, in his letter in the Chronicle last week, Councillor Kim Gottlieb suggests that because he invited Professor Biddle to address the Central Winchester Regeneration Group, he was dismissed as its chairman. However, we all know the real reason is that he is being investigated by the Standards Committee following very serious allegations of bullying of officers of the City Council. He also suggests that the council has attempted to persuade Professor Biddle to its view that a full archaeological excavation is too expensive and not necessary. The implication in his letter is that Professor Biddle has in some way been nobbled by the council. This in itself is a disgraceful slur on the integrity of an eminent academic, as well as the officers, members and leader of the council, and is completely without foundation. Councillor Gottlieb should publicly apologise to Professor Biddle and the council at the earliest opportunity. That's from Paul Twelfthtree, Burriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Next letter is from Councillor Victoria Weston. It's on the same subject. It's headed Impartial Expert. Sir, Councillor Gottlieb's letter last week, following the recent visit to Winchester of Professor Martin Biddle, was hugely disappointing. Professor Biddle is not only one of the leading international experts in Roman, Saxon and medieval archaeology, but a man who knows and loves Winchester with a passion that few can equal. The notion that anyone could persuade Professor Biddle to present anything other than his own expert and well-founded opinion is ridiculous. Professor Biddle has many friends and admirers in Winchester who I have no doubt, along with myself and my colleagues, wish to offer him some reassurance that his expert advice and guidance will be heeded whenever it is offered. I urge Councillor Gottlieb to apologise unreservedly for the adverse impression he gave in his letter. Written by Councillor Victoria Weston, Chairman of the Central Winchester Regeneration Group, Church Road, Newtown Fareham.
And this letter has a firework moan, as expressed by Fred Pigeon. Sir, I would like to thank the Winchester Roundtable for organising yet another fireworks display this year. The ability to purchase tickets online and collect them at the YMCA Cafe was inspired. However, being a long-time attender of this event, I was a little disappointed that the actual fireworks were set off in the rugby club car park. The effect of the firework display and the sound of the fireworks exploding in the clear night sky were diminished by the removal behind the trees bordering the rugby club car park. Whilst I am in favour of health and safety, I felt that this new initiative lessened the enjoyment and the thrill of this year's display. We are moving even further away from the old Orams Arbour displays of yesteryear, when you could really feel the heat from the bonfire and experience at close hand the sights, sounds and smells of the fireworks. Fred Pigeon, The Postures, Kingsworthy.
And this letter from Bob Bland says, ban on fireworks. Sir, it's November the 1st, and already 5 days previously, the sound of fireworks has started to fill the evening air. The non-caring have begun the annual regime of scaring animals, the elderly and the vulnerable, with the obsession of letting off more explosive-sounding fireworks well before November the 5th. What is the purpose of fireworks? It is the commemoration of the failure of Guy Fawkes to blow up Parliament. As he awaited his punishment on the gallows, Fawkes left off the platform to avoid having his testicles cut off, his stomach opened, and his guts spilled out before his eyes. Mercifully for him, he died from a broken neck. But his body was subsequently quartered and his remains were sent to the four corners of the kingdom as a warning to others. Ask the kids from war-torn countries how they react to loud explosions. Check out the way animals shake and cower in fear, and get the views of the elderly. I enjoy the sight of beautiful modern-day fireworks in a clear moonlit sky like millions of people around the globe. But why do we need to have the excessive boom noise associated with such magical displays? It is time to take action and stop the sale of fireworks before November the 5th and ban their use before and after this date. Furthermore, regulate the noise emissions. After all, I can't use a noisy mower, so why should we put up with explosive noises which scare the life out of those mentioned above? To conclude, one night a year is sufficient to let off what is becoming an antisocial, my flashes and bangs are bigger than yours culture. And it's time for new rules to be brought into place, and this should be made law. That's from Bob Bland, Upton Grey Close, Hairstock, Winchester.
Robin Atkins writes, ARC Finances. Sir, Alsford Recreation Centre, ARC, is a small business with takings of £180,000 a year, Chronicle, November the 3rd. In order to run it profitably and for the community, it needs good financial controls. £50,000 in capital resources as well as organisational skills in arranging entertainment to supplement the sports clubs. This will ensure a profitable small business. 1. Opening hours. These should be reduced considerably to ensure that the bar opens those evenings where sporting events entertainment is taking place. It must not open weekday afternoons for the odd drinker. The opening should be based on events. The total opening hours will be dramatically cut and the ratio of staff costs will drop. 2. Staff costs. These need to be 25%, maximum 30% of takings, or £45,000 in total, as against £90,000 currently. 3. Gaming machines. These are needed and should bring in £20,000 profit per year. 4. Families. The ARC needs to build up family involvement by entertainment and not just being a drinking establishment. There are 5 pubs, oblique hotels in Alsford to provide this. 5. Business plan. Produced with budgets and cash flow. New Alsford Town Council, NATC, should not agree any tenancy without reviewing the business plan and ensuring capital of £50,000 in place. 6. Financial controls. Actual figures, taking staff costs, etc., reviewed weekly and monthly accounts within 7 days of month end. It needs a qualified accountant. 7. Other events. Car boot sale to be held in ARC car park on a monthly basis to increase takings. Hiring out a function room to ensure the public for social events. These are my suggestions for a profitable ARC. If NATC does not review the new tenant, all the previous and current problems will resurface. And that was written by Robin Atkins of Lindley Gardens, Alsford.
Paul Williams writes a short letter, call to MP. Sir, can our MP, Steve Brine, assure his constituents that in any parliamentary vote on Article 50, he will represent the will of Winchester electors who, in voting 59% to remain in the EU, provided a clearer mandate than the 52% nationally who voted to leave? Paul Williams, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
This next letter from Michael Moore is a parking plea. Sir, with Christmas and the annual event of Find a Parking Space fast approaching in Winchester, can I suggest one change that may reduce the congestion on the one-way system? Is there any chance that the machines issuing tickets in the Brooks be relocated further down in the depths of the car park? This would stop, or at least reduce, cars queuing in the one-way system that can back up vehicles all the way to Bar End. That's from Michael Moore, Winchester Road, Waltham Chase.
Paul Bowman writes, unsightly view. Sir, I have noticed, who has not, the recent arrival of a motorbike and bicycle delivery company's staff sitting on the forecourt of the Discovery Centre on Jury Street. I often use the library, and it concerns me as well as other library users that this unsightly crew are lazing around and literally lying on the benches provided for the library users to use. This group has grown, and often there are a large number of them. I asked library staff member about it, and she said they've been asked to move on a number of occasions, but they just don't bother to move. Why are they there? Do they have legal permission, license to be there every day, 7 days of the week, ruining the view of the building, taking up space and seating, and littering the forecourt with their own rubbish? I was in the library a few days ago when it was raining, and, surprise, surprise, I saw four or five of these people sitting down, taking up table and chair space, clearly designed for the library users, surely not a local delivery firm's staff to take advantage of. It's written by Paul Bowman of Romsey Road, Winchester.
David Hoggart says that the future of pubs is not looking good. Sir, Belgarum is being too complacent in the, quote, panic for pubs is exaggerated, unquote, piece, as noted in the issue of November the 3rd. It would be wonderful if both the King Charles and Fox and Hounds reopen soon. The fact that Fuller's owns the former is not much reassurance. Look at how they dealt with Gales of Horndean when they shut the brewery, sacked the workforce and flogged off the land. The latter pub is owned by Enterprise Inns and has been closed for over a year. If Enterprise were that concerned for the village, they would reduce the price and so get sale or rental income. At this rate, they run the risk of causing the lovely building and the site to become dilapidated, undermining the chances of it reopening as a pub, so being only fit for demolition and redevelopment. So, Belgarum, be more aware of the real world, and certainly don't extend your complacency to the world of local papers, where you too are under even more threat. David Hoggart, Northbrook Avenue, Winchester.
Foreign Sacrifices, writes Peter Rees, former leader of the Winchester City Council Labour Group. Sir, as the annual service of remembrance approaches and as we continue to be completely in the dark about the future of the UK, I would like to offer a few words about the sacrifices made by gallant and heroic airmen who gave their lives during the Battle of Britain. The battle raged in the air above the skies of the south and southeast of England between July the 10th, 1940, and October the 31st, 1940. Over 3,000 aircrew gave their lives to stop the Luftwaffe. I recently visited the Battle of Britain Memorial at Chapel Le Fern near Folkestone. It's a remarkably well-chosen and beautiful location overlooking the English Channel. The beautiful memorial records and commemorates the names of those who died. What is so moving are the names of those airmen from Europe who made their way to the Great Britain, enlisted, trained, flew and died saving this country. Many also came from Commonwealth countries as well as those from the UK. At a time when we have been undermined as a nation by the decision to remove ourselves from the EU, we should never forget those brave young men who came from the countries we now wish to cast into oblivion. They died so that we could be free and Europe could be rid of Nazi tyranny. The names of so many Poles and Czechs stand alongside those devoted and brave men from everywhere who united to fight to save our country. This is also a time when targeted racist attacks against hard-working citizens from these countries who live and work in the UK are increasing. So when we stand in honourable silence next Sunday and remember the fallen, perhaps we should be more thankful for the sacrifice these British, European and Commonwealth men gave during these 4 months. Do visit this fitting memorial, for should we forget, they gave us our freedom. That's from Peter Rees, former leader of the Winchester City Council Labour Group, Monarch Way, Winchester.
We now have some items of historical interest, and we have these from 100 years ago, 50 years and 25 years.
100 years ago was November the 11th, 1916. It's headed Darkness Dangers. Sir, may I be allowed to endorse the letter of a lady clerk urging the hardship and danger caused by the prohibition of electric torches or lanterns in the streets at night? Many people are obliged to go about after dark facing the vagaries of our Winchester pavements and the unexpected posts and other obstacles on the footway. Returning from some war work on Monday night, I received a blow across the face from a soldier's stick carried under his arm. Let the police authorities, if they wish, order the glass of electric torches, etc., to be covered with white or red tissue paper. Motorists and bicyclists are allowed to protect themselves. It seems hard that the poor pedestrian is only allowed to carry a light on condition that he is accompanied by travelling animals.
50 years ago, November the 12th, 1966. Rainy fireworks. In the light of the very bad weather on Saturday evening, Winchester Round Table were counting as a success their November the 5th celebrations. Certainly many hundreds of people braved the rain to support them in their efforts to raise money for charity, but equally so, many others were deterred from coming, and their presence would probably have added £50 to the profit. The organisers were not downhearted, however, for the table also looks upon the evening as providing entertainment for the people of Winchester. This was certainly the case, for the city, and particularly the youth organisations, responded to the carnival spirit of the evening.
25 years ago, that's November the 8th, 1991, Eagle Star lands. The day after Eagle Star unveiled plans for a 5,000-home new town at Mitchell-Dever Station, BBC TV South is screening a programme about the implications of this large-scale development in the heart of the Hampshire countryside. Called The Eagle Has Landed, and broadcast on BBC Two next Thursday, November the 7th, as part of the Southern Eye series, it focuses on two farmers who are now fighting the multinational company for their homes, their livelihoods and their way of life. Clive Dixon and John Patterson are both tenant farmers living and working near Mitchell-Dever. Both hope to pass on the living to their sons. But this natural progression is threatened by Eagle Star's proposed housing development.
Now we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will be followed by letter from Westminster, and then after that, first person.
Yes, editorial comment is headed, Barrack's decision, a sad one for the city. In June, this newspaper revealed the threat to St John Moore Barracks. Many local people thought the danger was far-fetched, as the Army Training Regiment base was only 30 years old. One parish councillor described it as a non-story. On Monday, the government announced the Bates will close in 2020. At the time, the Ministry of Defence said there were no plans to sell the base, rather a cynical, literal interpretation of a question that must even then have been bordering on an untruth. The announcement is sad, ending a direct link to Victorian times when Peninsula Barracks was built and weakening a connection to the military going back centuries. But Worthy Down remains and is being developed, securing its long-term future. Local agencies, including the MP, University, Chamber of Commerce and the City Council, have launched a campaign for a knowledge park on the site. This is to be welcomed, much preferable to housing, when the city's needs for the next 15 years are already met, partly by Barton Farm, just across the Andover Road. However, a knowledge park will attract people with more cars than teenage soldiers. If it is to be sensibly pursued, more thought needs to be given to the impact on local roads, especially the Sussex Street, Andover, City, Stockbridge Roads junction.
This week, the letter from Westminster is written by George Hollingbury. These last few weeks, there's been much talk about hard and soft Brexit, being in or out of the single market, and more besides, with quite a few people getting into rather a lather over it all. Great swathes of column inches have been dedicated to the options, but I feel compelled to say just this. No such distinctions on how the United Kingdom will leave the European Union actually exist. There's no hard or soft, or in or out, depending on which way you voted on June the 23rd. There's just Brexit and what we negotiate. The deal's also not going to be Norwegian or Swiss. It's going to be UK. It'll be something that works for both of us and the EU. Now, I fully understand people want to know what Brexit will entail and why they are worried about it. This is why hard and soft and other options have filled the narrative for a whole variety of reasons, ranging from those truly wanting to remain in the EU to those truly wanting to make political capital out of the situation. Thankfully, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, is standing firm and has made it clear there won't be a running commentary on our strategy and negotiation, and I couldn't agree more. The whole idea this government should show its hand prior to triggering Article 50 and the negotiations with our European partners, frankly, beggars belief. It would be akin to getting a builder around to quote for a new extension and then asking, "What's the most you've got to spend?" And you telling them. Don't be surprised when the quote comes back a fraction under the figure you so helpfully supplied. So we have to be careful what we say, just like our European friends will be, because this is no small matter. This is about a deal for the UK that will give us prosperity, global free trade opportunities, security, partnership with Europe, and control of our borders, our laws, and our future. And we can have all those things and more if we negotiate well, compromise, and yes, stand firm and stand up for ourselves when needed. Finally, one Brexit myth centred on, quote, "We must have freedom of movement of people or we won't get access to the EU market," unquote. That was blown out of the water last month. Canada has just signed a free trade deal with the EU, and nowhere in it does it include the free movement of people between Europe and Canada. So we're not about to be inundated with friendly, maple syrup-loving people who say a boot rather than about, and look dismayed when you ask where in the United States they're from. But we will be able to freely trade with them. And there's no reason why that can't apply to the UK too, post-Brexit. George Hollingbury, MP for Mayen Valley.
First person this week is written by Jo Anna Lewis, and she's entitled her piece, "Show-Stopping Vision Needed." King Alfred is trending. The monarch, founder of the nation and icon of Winchester, is now more popular than Michael Bublé in a mankini. Alfred's mention in memoriam in this newspaper a few weeks ago to mark the day he hung up his metal underpants for the last time struck a sentimental chord with the public. Flowers were even placed at his statue to mark the date. The Winchester pub in Hyde that bears his name has recently had a fabulous makeover, and Alan Lovell of Hampshire's Cultural Trust announced that Winchester should make a bid for World Heritage Site status based around King Alfred's game changer of a reign. So important is the medieval world of Winchester, including the cathedral, Hyde Abbey, St Cross, and the social, cultural and linguistic networks these worlds within worlds were generating, that many people believe this city deserves the coveted UNESCO status. We walk on the very birthplace of the English-speaking world. As the Winchester Deserves Better campaign revealed, council leaders cannot grasp the importance of this, and they are to blame for Winchester underselling its historical assets. Large areas of potentially significant archaeological remains lie under Silver Hill. So wouldn't it make long-term commercial sense to invest in proper expert advice as to what lies below the ground and thus start supporting this exciting bid? Currently, what exactly is there is unclear, as is what it would cost to find out. Likewise, a secure future for the antiques market and a state-of-the-art museum in the city centre, not on the leisure centre site, like Portsmouth's for the Mary Rose, would be strong opening salvos. Instead, the powers that be are bulldozing the public into accepting a previous failed model for Silver Hill, Henderson Mark III. Such a model, constructed through a process that has been judged a failure, producing a design dismissed as inappropriate, would not just be a travesty of common sense and of 21st century commercial sense, but it would destroy forever precious remains of national importance. The recent official reassurances given to the world-renowned archaeological expert and local treasure, Professor Martin Biddle, that the remains would be spared by the 2009 scheme are utter tosh. When big structures are planned and foundations laid, the momentum has built up. Building works are never shelved once started. Professor Biddle has also been persuaded, it seems, into accepting it's too expensive to excavate. Well, where's the hard evidence? Is it the same mysterious set of costings from Messrs. Haven't Got a Clue and Sons, registered to Planet Non-Existence, that made the multi-storey car park too expensive to repair? Yet £800,000 has been found to demolish it, to try build up momentum for the relaunch of Silver Hill Mark III, no doubt. And what timing! If anyone wants to drive into Winchester to do their Christmas shopping, do it now. Sure, the UNESCO bid is hugely ambitious. Even getting on the shortlist involves meeting stringent requirements. But the aspiration to this status is the way forward. The best place to start is with a city committed to a vision for Winchester that will make it a cultural and commercial hub by capitalising on its unique place in world history. This includes a vision for Silver Hill that incorporates its underground remains rather than destroying them with the foundations of a giant shopping centre no one will visit. The new historical map of Winchester, based on paintings recently discovered in Winchester College Library, reveals that the brooks, the underground streams running through the town, were still open as recently as the 1750s. So let's open them up again. We need a vision that can match the draw of the cathedral, a showstopper. Luckily, there are many people of vision in this town. It's a pity council leaders aren't among them.
There are no special announcements this week, but in terms of what's on, we are getting close to Christmas, so there's quite a listing here of events relating to Christmas. So you've got plenty of time, 5 weeks or so, to plan ahead. The Christmas market at the cathedral opens at the end, towards the end of next week. I think it's on Thursday the 17th it opens. On Saturday the 3rd of December, also at the Cathedral at 7:30, the Wainfleet Singers are giving a concert. And for tickets and information, you should phone 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275 for the Wainfleet Singers concert at the Cathedral on Saturday the 3rd of December, 7:30. On Wednesday the 7th of December, also at 7:30, again in the Cathedral, there is Light Up a Life Christmas service, a celebration of life and those no longer with us. This is a church service, so no tickets or admission charges, but no donations to the name to Naomi House would be welcome. On Friday the 9th of December at 7:30 in the Discovery Centre, the Winchester Fusion Choir Charity Concert. And for information and tickets, the telephone number is 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603 for the Winchester Fusion Choir Charity Concert at the Discovery Centre on the Friday the 9th of December. Now, some dates for carol services, which you may like to note down. For Christ Church on the 18th of December at 4:30 and 6:30. Hope Street, Middlebrook Street, on the 18th of December at 6 p.m. St Barnabas in Week, 16th of December at 6 p.m. St Cross, 18th of December at 5:30. And St Luke's, Stanmore, the 18th of December, there is the Blessing of the Crib and community carols at 5 p.m. The main carol services in the cathedral are on Wednesday the 21st and Thursday the 22nd of December at 6:30, the doors opening at 5:30. There are family carol services in the cathedral on Sunday the 11th and Sunday the 18th at 3:30. And the family Christmas services, the one where you are encouraged to take the younger members of your family along for them to dress up as angels and shepherds and such like, will be on Saturday the 24th of December, that's Christmas Eve, at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. And final thing about Christmas, there are pop-up shops, whatever those are, at the City Mill and the City Museum in the square. There are excellent for gifts made in Hampshire, and also a very pleasant stop for coffee and cake. So that's at the City Mill and the City Museum. Lighting up times today, Friday the 11th of November, sunrise was at 7:15 in the morning, and sunset will be at 4:20 in the afternoon. And Wednesday of next week, sunrise is at 7:25 in the morning, and sunset will be at 4:15 in the afternoon. If you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recordings you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now continue with items of general news interest.
Yes, and the first item is headed Making Most of Opera. The Grange Festival wants to make more of its unique setting as an opera venue. The festival is proposing a refit of the Grange Theatre and improvements to the road access and setting of Northington Grange near Alresford. Among the proposals are a new road to replace the bumpy track and footpaths linking the house to the lake. It is extending its fundraising campaign to refit the Grange Theatre in advance of a new era at the much-loved site. The Grange Festival was formed earlier this year following the departure of Grange Park Opera to Surrey. Its launch is on June the 7th. GPO take with them key items, leaving the theatre empty. The red velvet seats, chandeliers in the theatre and house, together with some vital stage equipment and flying bars, have been removed. And the Grange Festival extends its major fundraising efforts to ensure a high-quality refit in time for the new season. Founder supporters have already pledged £1.6 million out of a total of £3 million target to re-equip and refurbish the theatre and ensure that opera lovers can enjoy a broader range of performances in better conditions. The Baring family, which also owns the estate in which the historic Greek Revival mansion sits, have begun a re-landscaping restoration project. Working closely with eminent landscape architect Kim Wilkie, the Barings aim to restore the parkland to its original Arcadian glory, opening up vistas of the lake and creating a new drive into the park to mirror the original approach to the house. Mark Baring said, "We are much looking forward to working with the Grange Festival to ensure that a full season of opera will be presented in 2017 under the artistic leadership of Michael Chance." Michael Moody, general manager of the Grange Festival, said, "This fundraising challenge will allow us to create a theatre fit for the 21st century needs of the audience as well as artistic teams." Opening in June 2017, the Grange Festival is dedicated to building on the great tradition of opera productions in the award-winning theatre of the Grange, Hampshire. Audiences will be able to enjoy a wider range of work there than ever before. The first season, opening on June the 7th, the Grange Festival presents three operas that have never been staged at the Grange before. Monteverdi's Il Ritorno del Lucis in Patria, Bizet's Carmen, and Britten's Albert Herring.
Rotary's Young Musicians. Winchester Rotary hosted the first round of the Rotary Young Musicians Festival in the delightful surroundings of the Mirror Room at Prince's Mead School on Sunday, November the 6th. Young people from a number of local schools took part. Winchester College, St Swithin's, Westgate, Henry Beaufort and King's were all represented. The overall winner, the best instrumentalist on the violin, was Byron Adlam from Winchester College. Rosanna Culver from St Swithin's, who performed Music for a While by Henry Purcell, was judged best vocalist. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, and Winchester Rotary President Fiona Whitehouse presented the winner's shield and all participants received certificates.
Lantern procession to mark start of Christmas. It's the annual Christmas event that's loved by families and children in Winchester. The area around Winchester Cathedral will be lit up in style as this year's lantern procession will take place on December the 1st. The popular annual event is one which families from across the city look forward to each year. From 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. the procession will take place in the city centre. There will also be community carols organised in association with Churches Together in Winchester. Meanwhile, Bella Crafts will give children the chance to make lanterns with a workshop at their Rumsey and Fair Oak sites, giving children a chance to get creative in the days before the event. This year, however, the procession will take place in the outer close. Usually it's taken place in the city centre. A spokesman for Winchester Cathedral said, "We're all looking forward to something which has grown considerably in popularity over the years and become a regular event in many families' calendars. The celebrations include live music, congregational carols, and conclude with fireworks."
Pets killed in city house fire. A Winchester family was left devastated when a number of their pets were killed after a fire engulfed their front room. The blaze, triggered by a heat lamp in the house on Battery Hill, Stanmore, burned through a tortoise cage and filled the room with smoke. Fire crews from Winchester and Eastleigh were called at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, November the 4th, but were unable to save two tortoises and two budgerigars. However, a dog, a guinea pig and a parrot were rescued from the smoke-logged room. Firefighters confirmed that the fire was started by the lamp near the pet cage, either because it was defective or by setting ablaze combustible materials close by.
Show choir is on song for concert. Winchester's Great Hall came alive with the sound of Hampshire Music Service's show choir. They sang songs from well-known musicals in front of a star-studded audience, which included world-famous composer Lord Lloyd Webber. The performance was given in honour of the chairman of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Keith Chapman, MBE, who is supporting a year of music for Hampshire's young people. There were 85 children performing, many of them members of Hampshire County Council's new singing ensemble, and they were joined by a choir of 40 from the Kingsclere Singers. Councillor Chapman said, "I thoroughly enjoyed the evening. The standard of the performances was very impressive indeed. It's been the high point so far of my year of music, especially seeing the new show choir performing for the first time. They sounded marvellous, and it was a great experience for them to perform alongside an experienced choir like the Kingsclere Singers. The show choir is an exciting new opportunity for young people to explore a style of music that many of them are passionate about. Like all the choirs and ensembles run by our music service, it is a fun environment to really stretch and challenge musical thinking, teamwork, and performing skills. Music benefits young people in so many ways, and that's why our music service is such a valuable asset to Hampshire's young people." An audience of 150 people enjoyed the concert programme, which also featured soloists, including Gina Beck, an ex-Hampshire pupil who is now a West End star, and Suzanne Poole, aged 15, head girl of Romsey School, who sang "Wishing You Were Here Again" from Phantom of the Opera. The choir sang a wide range of songs from the West End musicals such as Les Miserables, The Lion King, Wicked, Sister Act, We Will Rock You, and Jersey Boys. Lord Lloyd Webber, the composer of some of the world's best-known musicals, is the champion of the Hampshire Music Hub. The Hub is a collaboration between Hampshire Music Service and a number of music venues, arts organisations and local councils across Hampshire who aim to support young people's involvement in music. Throughout the Chairman's Year of Music, the Council's Music Service is supporting schools to add more musical events and activities to their calendars by providing an award scheme and also adding more concerts to their programmes of their ensembles countrywide. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of Keith Chapman, Councillor Keith Chapman, and Lord Lloyd Webber standing underneath the round table in the Great Hall, and also of Councillor Keith Chapman, MBE, and the West End star Gina Brooke, who is, of course, a Hampshire girl. So a very happy occasion and well worthy of the ranking.
Mediation praise. Winchester Mediation Service, now in its 15th year, has been praised by the police and council for helping quarrelling neighbours to sort out their differences. Chief Inspector Claire Taylor told its AGM, "You provide an invaluable service in resolving disputes between neighbours before they escalate to the point where we may have to consider prosecutions. Your intervention in so many cases has saved us a huge amount of resources, and in particular the considerable expense in taking people to court. It has also freed up my officers to spend more time on other cases, and you have our full support." The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, added, "You provide an important and much-needed service for which the City Council is very grateful." Noise is the most common problem the service is asked to mediate over, the AGM heard. Next door's barking dogs, over-boisterous children, late-night DIY, or doors being continually slammed can cause rifts between families, particularly in poorly soundproofed homes. Other causes of disagreement can be inconsiderate parking, leaving rubbish where it attracts vermin, or a resident in a block of flats not doing their share of the communal cleaning. The administrator, Ian Gilchrist, said, "Often a quiet word with one's neighbour will quickly resolve the problem, but sometimes this can be met with an unwillingness by the other person to discuss it, or worse, abuse and threats. In cases like this, we try to persuade both sides to meet together to discuss the issues calmly and politely and to agree a way to live side by side in peace." Being a not-for-profit charity, the service offers mediation free of charge to residents throughout the Winchester district, whilst a small charge is made to councils, housing associations and similar organisations.
Council chasing £700,000 Silver Hill debt. The Silver Hill developer, Henderson, now known as THRE, owes the City Council more than £700,000, the council has revealed. More details of the collapse of the £150 million Silver Hill joint development with THRE have been disclosed. Council leader Stephen Godfrey told Councillor Rose Burns that the council has claimed £721,000 from THRE after the termination of the development agreement earlier this year, and that discussions are ongoing. Councillor Godfrey also repeated that the council viewed the planning permission granted in 2009 to have lapsed. In a written answer to a question from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, the leader said, "Although no formal determination has been made, I consider that the planning permission has not been lawfully implemented and has therefore expired." Since January, the council has had only one meeting with the developer to discuss the disused Friars Gate Medical Centre, which THRE own. Kevin Warren, Assistant Director, Estates and Regeneration, has commissioned a valuation of the building. THRE could let, sell or try to develop the building, the council heard. Officers have also twice met with Stagecoach to discuss the future of the increasingly dilapidated bus station, which the firm had expected to have been demolished by now and which it no longer wishes to operate. They are meeting St Clement's Surgery regularly to progress the purchase and relocation of the surgery. Planning permission has been granted for the surgery to move to the car park on the corner of Friarsgate and Upper Brook Street. Liberal Democrat Councillor Jackie Porter said people were worried about the lack of activity at St Clement's, which has 17,000 patients. Councillor Godfrey said, "We are limited as to what we can say about somebody else's business. It is very important that we are very interested in moving it forward."
School Nets Design Award. A Winchester secondary school has won a national design award. Westgate School was the Spaces Civic Building of the Year joint overall winner. The Heritage Building of the Year winner was the National Museum of the Royal Navy, Portsmouth. Councillor Mel Kendall, Executive Member for Economic Development, said, "Congratulations to the Property Services team, who are once again award winners. These awards show the range of their expertise, from designing modern-looking and energy-efficient school buildings to helping the public access an important part of our heritage. They should be rightly proud of their achievements." Westgate shared the top award with Birmingham New Street train station. The awards were presented last Friday in Manchester. Westgate School was remodelled by extending the former on-site boarding house and nursery to create a new 420-place primary school, creating Hampshire's first 4-16 all-through-school campus. The new primary school has double height and open spaces to increase natural light and ventilation, which also provides greater flexibility for learning and social cohesion. The brick and slate roof also complements and closely matches the surrounding campus. Car parking has been moved from the centre of the site to create an all-weather school green for school and community use, as well as new and improved pedestrian and cycle routes and school bus stop. HMS M33 in Portsmouth Historic Dockyard is one of the few remaining British World War I warships, which saw active service in the 1915 Gallipoli campaign. Funded by Heritage Lottery funding, the National Museum of the Royal Navy appointed the property services team to design new stairs, lifts and walkways to the historic warship, including the experience of descending 6 metres into the dock and a unique view of M33's distinctive flat bottom before stepping aboard.
Zany Zebras, a £103,000 success. The Zany Zebra Summer of Fun across Southampton has raised a six-figure sum for wildlife conservation. Marwell's charity fundraising auctions have raised a final sum of £103,560. Hundreds of thousands of people visited the city and Marwell Zoo to see the scores of zebra sculptures. The project highlighted the urgent conservation needs for Grevy's zebra whilst raising valuable funds to protect wildlife and communities in northern Kenya. The Grevy's zebra sculptures were sold at a grand auction at the Hilton at the Aegeus Bowl in Southampton. The highest bid was for Snappy, a shark-themed zebra, which was sponsored by Winchester-based Denplan. The dental payment plan specialist bought its own sculpture for £4,000. Other high bids included the strawberry design Z-Berry, sold to its sponsor Pickwell Farm for £3,500, and Gilbert, the poster boy for the campaign, sold for £3,250 to a private bidder. Businessman Tony Parker from West End in Southampton bought Zebby Road for £2,500. The zebra's Beatles-inspired design captures the iconic zebra crossing shot of the Fab Four from the album Abbey Road. Tony said, "It's one of the greatest album covers ever produced from a band whose genius we will never see the likes of again. To link the Beatles to Marwell's Grevy's Zebra Conservation Programme makes Zebby a uniquely important piece of art." The grand auction was followed by an online auction for the miniature sculptures, which formed a pint-sized trail around the zoo over the summer. These mini zebras raised £16,010. The highest bid in the miniature charity auction was Savannah, designed and created by renowned wildlife artist and Marwell Zoo's artist-in-residence Pip McGarry, which sold for £1,850. The Marwell's Zany Zebras schools and youth groups have welcomed back their own small sculptures, a lasting memory of their involvement in this unique project. Marwell's Zany Zebras took over the city for 10 weeks over the summer, brightening up the pavements, enlivening the parks and adding vibrancy to the high street, and most importantly, bringing smiles to thousands of visitors and residents. Marwell's project manager, Kirsty Mathison, said, "I'm so grateful for the generosity. These much-loved sculptures..." Sorry, this doesn't make any sense, but I'll just read it as it is. "But they've all gone to good homes. It will help support Marwell's work with Grevy's zebra and other wildlife in northern Kenya." And that article is accompanied by three photographs. One is of the Zebby Road one, which is bright blue and got the Beatles crossing the zebra crossing in Abbey Road on it. The second photograph is a picture referred to in the article of Snappy the shark zebra. So it's got a shark fin on its back, which looks really odd. And then there's a third smaller photograph, which I don't entirely understand. The caption is "The zebras to be auctioned." And there's a photograph of a chap. There are some zebras there and a photograph of a chap who looks as though he's eating a pie, but it obviously snapped him on his lunch break.
Raw milk from the cow to the public. Many dairy farmers are feeling the pinch as the money they receive from supermarkets for milk is less than it costs them to produce. However, Oliver Neagle and Julie Smith of Uplands Farm near Botley have diversified and have started what they believe to be the second vending machine service of unpasteurised milk in Hampshire. Mr. Neagle said, "We started around 18 months ago due to the decline in milk prices, which led to our dairy farming operations becoming unsustainable. So we have had to find a way to generate income and pay the bills. We started the production of raw milk using a special vending machine brought in from Italy after obtaining a license from the Food Standards Agency to produce it. We then sell the milk directly to the general public from the farm gate. Sales of raw milk are very tightly regulated. It cannot be sold directly through the supermarkets. However, it can be sold to consumers by the producer. The first in Hampshire was Mark Stevens at Cole Henley near Whitchurch last year. Last year, the Food Standards Agency looked at removing the restrictions. It concluded that the risk associated with raw drinking milk still remains high, and there was an uncertainty over consumer protection and whether it can be maintained if the market for raw milk is expanded. However, Mr. Neagle said that the raw milk was healthy as it contained vitamins D and A and is higher in protein and fats than conventional milk. The main benefit of selling direct to the public, according to the Food Standards Agency, is the fairer price for farmers. Raw milk typically sells for around £1.30 a litre compared to pasteurised milk that supermarkets may sell for 20 pence a litre, which costs 30 pence per litre to produce. The downside, however, is that we only produce 50 to 100 litres a day compared to pasteurised milk, where we produce more than 1,800 litres a day, said Mr. Neagle. He also plans to sell raw cream, which isn't as tightly regulated. The National Farmers Union believes existing hygiene controls mean raw milk is safe to the consumer. Spokeswoman Isabel Bretherton said, "It is important that controls on the sale of this produce are proportionate and appropriate for the modern consumer and the dairy farmer."
Office space crisis looming. The multi-million station approach development in Winchester must address the growing shortage of office space in the city, a meeting heard. Councillors were told that there is a mounting crisis because of the shortfall that jeopardises the city's economic future. Estates Director Kevin Warren briefed councillors as they discussed the troubled scheme last Wednesday. The local economic partnership have undertaken extensive work and there is an absolute shortage of office space, said Mr. Warren. A large number of companies have contacted me indicating how concerned they are about the shortage. He pointed out that several years ago a refurbished Avalon house on Chesil Street was being let for £19.50 per square foot. Now it is £26 to £27, and more is being mentioned across the city centre. I have been contacted by a company in the last 2 weeks, he said, a company with an international reputation and a portfolio of £1.6 billion, extremely concerned about the ability to expand. Offices were being hoovered up by developers for conversion into residential. The laws of supply and demand means rents go up in absence of supply. Rents going up from £19.50 towards £30 indicates how serious the situation is for the city. Businesses will gradually be driven out of the city. That will have a detrimental impact on the economy if businesses are unable to develop, warned Mr. Warren. The first attempt to develop the area near the train station collapsed in July when councillors voted the scheme was too big. Council leader Stephen Godfrey said the council was now taking a different approach, with the design and procurement process managed by the Royal Institute of British Architects. But he added, "We need to move quickly to meet the needs of the business community. We are under increasing pressure for more office space, not least because of residential conversions." Council approved £1.5 million for commissioning design work. The ruling Tories accepted a Liberal Democrat amendment that would tighten the control of the process. Lib Dem councillors are concerned the second scheme would be too similar to the first because the same brief is likely to be the same. And this article is accompanied by a bird's eye view, if you like, of Carfax, the area around the station approach, showing the conjunction of Sussex Street, Carfax, and Dover Road and City Road, and the large number of office buildings that surround that area.
Concern raised over future of derelict Bushfield Camp. The future of Bushfield Camp on the edge of Winchester is again coming under the spotlight. Nearby residents have been hearing rumours about its future and local city councillors raised the issue at council. Councillor Brian Laming asked about discussions between agents of the owners, the church commissioners, who have been trying to develop the former barracks for 30 years, and the city council. Council leader Stephen Godfrey said the commissioners and their agents Deloitte have had several meetings with officers, quote, to explore how they could bring forward proposals which would meet local plan requirements, unquote. He said the council's policy was that only development around the camp's parade ground off Badger Farm Road would be acceptable. In the recent past, the university and some senior councillors, such as former leader George Beckett, have suggested use as a science park. Back in the 1980s, the commissioners proposed a supermarket and housing. But Councillor Laming, who represents Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery, said of the recent talks, "I find it quite disturbing that ward members have not had this information before. Ward members were due to meet the commissioners, but it was cancelled after the commissioner's agents met with officers." Fellow ward councillor Jan Warwick said, "What guarantees are there to protect the open space within Bushfield Camp to allow continued public access despite any development?" Deloitte's are running several workshops for members of the local business community and amenity groups and parish councils. There will be a community drop-in session on Tuesday, December the 13th, at the Middlebrook Centre in Winchester between 2 p.m. and 7 p.m.
300 council house target on schedule. Winchester Civic Chiefs are well on course to hit their target of building 300 new council homes in 10 years. The full council heard that 250 had been built, started or about to start within 5 years of the programme being launched. Council portfolio holder Caroline Horrell outlined 57 homes completed in Itchen Abbas, Otterbourne, Stanmore, Wick and Swanmore, 92 being built at Victoria Court, Cheswell Street and Hillier Way at Abbots Barton. Work to start in January on 14 in Alsford and Stanmore, and 87 being planned mainly in the Valley, Stanmore. Councillor Horrell said, "It is the overwhelming view of councillors that we should be building more. There are 2,300 people on the waiting list, waiting on average 4 years. We are constantly looking for new opportunities. The council is seeking other ways, such as building homes to sell or with varied ownership," she added. "One idea is to set up a housing company. The council is hampered by debt cap rules, so any major extension of the programme will require a separate vehicle. Officers have been working with the advisers from Trowers and Hamlin's law firm to investigate options. Councillor Horrell has approved £20,000 on a detailed business case.
A £2,900 sculpture stolen. A scruffy man walked into an upmarket Winchester City Arts Centre art gallery and walked out with a bronze sculpture valued at £2,900. Police are appealing for witnesses to the theft at the Minster Gallery on Great Minster Street. It happened between 12:30 p.m. and 12:40 p.m. on Monday, October the 24th, said the police. No payment was made and no authority was given for the man to remove the sculpture. The suspect was described as white, with a dishevelled look, of average height, aged between 30 and 40 years, of average build, with short dark hair and his front teeth missing. He was also described as wearing a large, dark, long-sleeve coat and jeans.
City prepares for Remembrance Day. A special field of remembrance has been created in Winchester this year, as every year. The field is a small enclosed area at Outer Close outside Winchester Cathedral, and people are encouraged to help add to the crosses ahead of Remembrance Day on Sunday. The ceremony for the opening of the field was led by Reverend Canon Rowley Ream and Brian Rees, along with members of the Royal British Legion and Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter. They gathered to pay simple tributes and remember those who have died in conflict. Members of the public stood and watched as Mr. Ream led the prayer, and the last post was played by Tom Toledo Brown, 15, a pupil at King's School. Derek Green, chairman of the Royal British Legion Winchester branch, said, "I think it's very important to remember those who sacrificed their lives in conflicts, especially as it's coming up to 100 years since the end of the First World War."
Fireworks events, a night to remember. Colours filled the Winchester sky on Saturday night as more than 20,000 people gathered for its annual fireworks display. The event, which was celebrating its 58th year, welcomed the masses at River Park Leisure Centre to celebrate Guy Fawkes Night and raised cash for Winchester charities. Starting at 6:30 p.m, a procession set off from the Broadway and made its way around the city centre to River Park. Despite the freezing temperatures, the leisure centre's grounds were crowded as families and friends gathered to see the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, light the bonfire. The renowned fireworks display followed, with visitors singing along to the music blaring from loudspeakers. The event put on by Winchester Roundtable raises money for local causes. However, earlier in the day, organisers announced the ticketed event had sold out, urging those without wristbands to stay away. The Winchester Round Table Bonfire and Fireworks Committee made the announcement just after 3 p.m, meaning it was the earliest ever sellout for the annual event. Chairman of the Bonfire Committee, Matt Robinson, said the evening was absolutely fantastic. It was really, really great, he added. The procession was well received and the atmosphere was amazing. The night went off without a hitch. There were no reported incidents and the 21,500 people that came left safely. More than £4,000 was also raised from the bucket collections for the charity Care After Combat. Meanwhile, more than 2,000 people attended the fireworks display at Colden Common Park on Saturday, a record turnout. The event, in its fifth year, is run and organised by volunteers from the local 9th Winchester Scouts. As well as the fireworks display, an impressive bonfire that towered for 8 metres lit up the field, its flames reaching nearly 30 metres up into the air.
On that very cheerful report, we end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And thanks also to our various technical teams. And thank you, of course, as always, to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.